every day, corporations that own 90% of mass media give you a dose of propaganda to keep your brain filled with hate for a particular head of state.
First, basic facts. China's been ruled by a brutal authoritarian regime.
Maduro is a brutal, corrupt leader. We will continue to make the case that he should step aside.
It may be the leader of Iran, North Korea, Cuba, Nicaragua, Venezuela, or Russia. The purpose is to keep you ready, to give your money in the lives of your sons and daughters to save the world. In the name of democracy, they loot and rob the resources of other nations.
Venezuela is one of the three countries I call the troika of tyranny. It'll make a big difference to the United States economically.
For a democracy where politicians are for sale and for the perpetuity of the mighty U.S. dollar, the time is now to put a stop to all these deadly mind games. Support your local community radio. More information at Pacifica.org.
In today's edition of COVID, Race, and Democracy.
COVID is only amplifying the injustice that is experienced by workers at Foster Farms.
California Central Valley workers protest the deaths of 9 meat plant workers who are being sent into contaminated plants without mandatory safety protections. Workers are getting ill, dying, and spreading the disease to their families and community, they say.
We received an email telling us that this might be considered criminal. We should not be having the webinar and so on, that academic freedoms are limited by charges of criminality, which we believe is not right.
When San Francisco State University professor Rabab Abdulhadi tried to have a virtual discussion on gender, justice, and resistance featuring revolutionary Palestinian Leila Khalid, social media platforms shut the event down.
Instead of justice, Breonna Taylor's family and community were told that officers Miles Cosgrove and Jonathan Mattingly were justified in their use of force.
And we go to Louisville, Kentucky, where the demand for justice continues after the state attorney general refused to hold the police responsible for the killing of Breonna Taylor. This is Pacifica Radio's COVID, Race, and Democracy, a collective effort by producers from the Pacifica Network and radio affiliates focused on COVID-19 and the many ways in which this pandemic touches people's lives. I'm your host, Nana Jumpfy. Meat plant workers have some of the highest COVID-19 infection rates in the country. Livingston, California is a company town with the Foster Farms poultry plant that employs 3,000 workers. In Livingston, 9 workers have died of COVID and hundreds are becoming infected. These workers have also infected their families and communities. Steve Zeltzer reports from a protest in front of the Foster Farms plant in Livingston.
Exploitation!
Shut it down!
Profit over lives!
Shut it down!
The whole damn system!
Shut it down!
Crisantema, Chrissy Gallardo. Well, we're out here just to defend workers at Foster Farms. It's been an injustice that has been happening, not just right now. I think COVID amplifies the lack of dignified treatment of workers in the Central Valley. Foster Farms has exploited my own aunt and uncle when they immigrated here, started working at Foster Farms, and as of like 3 years ago, my aunt had to stop working here because of injuries.
My name is Kelly.
And Kelly, you're a nurse that's with United, National Nurses United.
Yeah.
What are your concerns coming out here today to this factory, Foster Farms factory?
I'm a COVID nurse, so I work on a COVID unit, and I've taken care of Foster Farms patients. I want people to be protected regardless. And knowing that Foster Farms is a hot spot, I've taken care of patients. I've talked to patients face to face, and it's really sad. But the fact that people are in denial of wanting to talk about it, it angers me.
My name is Kaden Lohr. I was actually a former employee at Foster Farm, and one of my ex-advisor actually reached out to me to show up at this event to protest against coronavirus at Foster Farm due to the fact that Foster Farm, they do have a lot of money and they treat their workers like dirt. So then the reason why I'm here is to, you know, help support, because, you know, I don't want any of my fellow coworkers here to catch the virus And actually, one of my coworkers actually passed away from it. His name was Richard. He worked in DC-2. He was a cycle counter. And, you know, I don't want anything like that to happen again. You know, he was one of the best coworkers. He was one of the nicest guys. And yet, he passed away due to the coronavirus. They don't enforce the 6 feet. They don't enforce, you know, cleaning your areas, this and that. A lot of the things that we dislike was the pay. You know, the pay is barely over minimum wage.
I'm gonna go ahead and read the statement here. It's from Martha. How many more deaths do they want? Both my husband and I were loyal employees for 20 years. I just lost my husband, who worked for the company for over 27 years. I know now that Foster Farms does not care about their workers. They only care about their money. And I think that's extremely true. And it's not only true about Foster Farms, but it's true about many, many, many corporations all across California, across the country.
My name is Jess Serenellis with the Merced Brown Berets. We can't even get the COVID numbers for the county broken down by ethnicity. So we really can't see how hard communities of color are being impacted in Merced County. And that includes the workers that are here in Livingston, because that's really, it's to be able to address health disparities in the most vulnerable communities, we need that type of data.
So you're saying they kept the data secret? Well, they wouldn't release it?
They haven't even created a mechanism to be able to keep track of that stuff. Because I have asked public health employees for those numbers, you know, as well as like, there's numbers that are hard to get through the Merced County jail system also. So we don't know how hard our folks that are incarcerated in the county are being impacted by COVID, including the juvenile hall.
So what you're saying, this company really doesn't want this information out?
No, it's all intertwined also, right, with other agencies in the county.
So where's Cal OSHA? Why hasn't Cal OSHA come to this plant and protected the workers?
Well, you know, it's all about capitalism and the disrespect that they have for the working class, the proletariat in the Central Valley, with you know, what our farm workers are a part of, including food processing farm workers also.
And many workers have said they're afraid to speak out. What, is that true?
I of course it's true. You know, and we can't be angry with them for continuing to want to work here. We live in a county where the poverty rate is extremely high. The median income is extremely low, but the cost of living has only been climbing, and we need to live. You know, so you know, and it's also why it's always been a struggle to organize in the Central Valley, because we are a working class community. You know, our people are too busy working hard to survive. You know, we got two parents working in the fields, working in factories to survive, and still not making it. You know, and so like for them to be socially, you know, conscious of what's going on is a hard ask.
It's kind of like slave labor.
Oh, it's definitely slave labor. You know, it's exactly what it is. We got one group of people profiting off the suffering of the working class.
Our people, Merced County in particular, we're the sixth in the nation with the highest percentage of essential workers. That means that one in every three households has young people and immigrants and refugees that are out there working at Foster Farms, working at Dole, and even working in the fields. I'm proud to be the daughter of undocumented farm workers. Unfortunately, living in the Central Valley during this COVID pandemic has been really stressful. It has uplifted the injustice that we have been experiencing for the last decade. It's not even decades, but since the establishment of this country, where Black, Indigenous people of color have been exploited and have been treated as disposable. And COVID is only amplifying the injustice that is experienced by workers at Foster Farms. My cousin is working right now inside of that plant. My aunt had to stop working about 5 years ago because her body couldn't handle working here anymore. They treat humans as machinery, will work them till our people die. And this is the same thing in the field. So I'm just really appreciative that we're all here today across the state to uplift the injustice and the exploitation of people that have been happening in this valley, because we're not taking it anymore. And we're gonna make sure that post-COVID, we don't go back to the way things were, and that big ag and companies like Foster Farm are held accountable for the exploitation and extraction and death that they've been causing in this region.
In March and April of this year, worker advocates in California called for more OSHA inspectors to be hired. There are less than 200 in a state with 18 million workers. Only a small portion of inspectors are trained in foreign languages. A large number of the frontline workers in California speak Spanish and other non-English languages. The Central Valley is also home to politicians who say that the virus is a hoax. Both the mayor and sheriff of neighboring community Atwater have said they would refuse to enforce masking laws. Japan has also been hit with COVID, although not as severely as the United States, per official figures. Tozen Tokyo union leader Luis Carlet talks about how teachers and other workers are being affected by the pandemic and the economic decline. Tozen organizes mainly foreign workers in Japan.
In Japan, there's a system that they employers must pay 60% of the average wages during the when they furlough workers because of corona. So we've been fighting a lot about that 6%. We have a lot of workers in factories, and of course for them, they can't work online. So we've been pushing to make sure that proper safety measures are taken. Now, as far as Abe's reforms go, probably everyone knows that he pushed through a series of workplace reforms. And, the problem with Abe's reforms is that they're always sold as if they're pro-worker, when actually, if you look into it carefully, or if you're on the ground and you see what's actually happening, they're almost all really bad for workers. So for instance, even before Abe's workplace reforms, there was a new law that went into effect in 2013. And it said, well, if you've been on a fixed term contract for more than 5 years, you can switch to a permanent contract. So the idea was to increase job security, because many in Japan, more and more in Japan, are working on one-year contracts rather than permanent employment. So it's very easy to fire someone. So we call this the five-year rule. And so if you work at a same place more than 5 years, you can change yourself to permanent. However, the government, when they made this law, they didn't make it effective going back. So from 2013, that's when the clock started. And then if you were at a certain employer for more than 5 years, you could change to become permanent. So, of course, when employers fired everyone before the 5 years came up, because they didn't want to recognize permanent employment. So most of the reforms that came later from Abe were very similar to that. So for one example is that they said, up until now, there was no limit on the number of overtime hours. There was a kind of a general guidance of 45 hours. And so Abe came out with a ruling Liberal Democratic Party came out with a new limit on the number of overtime hours. So you think, wow, there's finally a legal limit on the number of hours you can work overtime per month. The problem was it was 100. So the limit was 100 hours of overtime per month, even though it was the first ever limit, a really dangerous level of overtime. In fact, the Ministry of Labor's own guidelines say that 8 hours per month of overtime represents a dangerous threshold beyond which, you risk dying from overwork. On the one hand, they put a cap on overtime hours, but the cap was ridiculously high, in fact, dangerously high. Other workplace reforms were, there was a what's called a co-pro, or high-level professionals. And what this is that if you make over 10.75 million yen per year, which is about $100,000 a year, if you make more than that, your employer doesn't have to pay you overtime. And so up until now, there was no threshold beyond which you wouldn't have to get paid overtime. So of course, this is good for employers. And of course, we suspect that later that number is going to come down, the number beyond which you don't get overtime pay. And of course, later they can slowly, gradually move that number down until nobody gets paid overtime. So that's a common theme that the Liberal Democratic Party has done is that they present things that are pro-worker or that don't seem so bad, and then gradually they make it worse and worse and worse. It's the same with worker dispatch law. Prime Minister Abe has been completely in league with Keidanren, the Japan Business Federation. I think the next prime minister, if it's Suga or whoever, I think in terms of labor and labor rights, I think it'll continue to be a gradual attack on labor. At least in our union, we're not celebrating Abe's fall because we think it's not going to change with the next LDP.
That was Louis Carlett, Tozen Tokyo Union leader. The Japanese government says the country plans to go ahead with hosting the Olympics. Author and theoretical physicist Dr. Michio Kaku shares some not so good news about COVID-19.
We have lots of anecdotal data that people who have recovered from COVID-19 have mental problems. Their mental acuity is off. So people complain that they're like living in a fog. They cannot remember things well. They're not as sharp as they used to be. Well, now it turns out that the coronavirus can infect not just the lungs, but also the brain as well. Studies done on autopsies of individuals that have died because of COVID-19 and also experiments on mice verify the fact that the virus can latch onto and infect brain cells as well. You see, our cells, especially the cells in our lung, have a lock. If you can open up the lock, you can gain entrance into our cells. And that's what the coronavirus has. It has a key. In fact, those spikes coming out of the coronavirus, they're like a molecular key. They fit inside the lock of our cells, which is called ACE2. So ACE2 is the receptor which allows the virus to sneak in to the cell. Well, our lungs have a lot of ACE2, and that's one of the reasons why it infects the lungs. But now we find out they can also affect brain cells as well. Now, if this report can be verified by other studies, it does explain why even after people have recovered from the coronavirus, they still feel the lingering effects. Because of the fact that the coronavirus can affect not just the lung cells, but brain cells as well. I should also point out that ACE2 receptors are actually found throughout the body. And it may explain, for example, why some people are more susceptible to the virus than others. For example, people who are more obese and other underlying stress factors seem to be correlated with the preponderance of the ACE2 receptor. So that may explain why some people can simply brush off the coronavirus and other people die because of the virus.
That was Dr. Michio Kaku, host of Exploration, presented by Pacifica Radio, WBAI.
Get up,
just heard Monkey Man by Toots Hibbert, who passed away due to complications from COVID-19 earlier this month. This is Pacifica Radio's COVID, Race, and Democracy. I'm Nana Jumphy. The growing censorship and shutdown of free speech was on full display this past week when San Francisco State University professor Rabab Abdelhadi presented a panel titled Whose Narratives? Gender, Justice, and Resistance, which featured Palestinian revolutionary Leila Khalid. The international panel faced attacks but went ahead as scheduled, only to be shut down by Zoom. It was not allowed to be streamed on YouTube. Facebook shut it down after only 23 minutes. Professor Abdelhadi talked about the attacks on her program and what this means for democracy and education.
The Ahmed Studies program, Arab and Muslim Ethnicities and Diaspora Studies, was started in 2007 when San Francisco State University recruited me from my job as director of the Center for Arab American Studies at University of Michigan, Dearborn, to specifically initiate this program. So it will become the fifth department in the College of Ethnic Studies. It's not actually a department, it's a whole college. In addition to American Indian, Africana, Asian American, at the time it used to be RASA, now it's called Latinx Studies. And so that was the basis on which I came to San Francisco State. The problem is that under Zionist pressure, the university professor, Robert Corrigan, basically canceled our searches in 2009 and then proceeded to defund the program completely. So it's been since, let's say, 2010, 2011, that I've been one faculty member. The problem is San Francisco State has been fighting me tooth and nail at every single level, both in terms of our academic program. So they're really, really trying to gut the program. One of, and targeted, and I would say, by Zionist groups who are targeting our program, because I believe one of the things that they are very disturbed by is actually speaking about the question of justice in for Palestine at the time when Israel is unable to actually defend its position in suppressing Palestinian rights. And Zionist groups in the U.S., what I call the Israel lobby industry. And I say industry because it's a network. It has its own structure. It has its own money. It has its own political commitment. Political connections, they are basically trying to silence. They're trying to silence any discussions in Palestine, censor us, violate our academic freedom and freedom of speech. On top of it also, they are also trying to prevent us from actually linking with other communities. So we are very much linking with anti-Zionist Jewish groups and individuals. We are linking with the strikers from 68. We believe that this is the role of education, what you all struck for over a year in 1968 and demanded, we are doing, bringing the community and the university together, making knowledge democratized, bringing knowledge from outside of the university, letting students engage with elders and leaders and so on. So they would like to stop that altogether. And the university administration that has become so corporatized, that is being run like a corporation, not really like an academic institution, like a public institution, has basically towed the line, the Zionist line, because they also receive tons of dollars and money from Zionist dollar. And I do know an authority, and I know that this happened this past week, the university president and administration received a letter from the executive director of the Jewish Federation of San Francisco, Jewish Community Federation, which, you know, peddles millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars, and who is also in charge of donor relations, telling them that you cannot have this webinar this coming Wednesday, where we are hosting a historic conversation with Leila Khaled, with Palestinian feminist icon and militant and feminist leader Leila Khaled, along with four other people, Ronnie Kasriels, who is a very well-known anti-Zionist leader in the liberation struggle in South Africa, in the anti-apartheid struggle, Laura Whitehorn, who is a very long-time former political prisoner, also anti-Zionist Jewish activist, and with the director, Rula Abu Daha, of the Bir Zeit Institute for Women's Studies, and also with Seko Odinga, who is a Black liberation struggler and leader who also spent many years in prison. And so they would like to silence us. They're actually trying to do all sorts of things, including Zionist groups have been mobilizing against it. They are saying that, and now the recent thing is I received from the university provost, saying that this, me and my colleague who's co-organizing the webinar with me, we received an email telling us that this might be considered criminal. we should not be having the webinar and so on, that academic freedoms are limited by charges of criminality, which we believe is not right, it's not fair. And so we don't believe that this is correct. We think that this is a way for us to be silenced further by the university administration as well, acting at the behest of Zionists and right-wing groups.
And the actual, some of the violence or threats, there have been posters put up on the campus accusing you of being a terrorist. Students have been attacked on Facebook pages. So it seems like the real assault on democratic rights and the right of professors and students to organize has actually been organized by the Zionists against you.
And tolerated by the university. So we had four sets of posters, actually, put up by David Horowitz, Freedom Center. Everybody knows he's a leading Islamophobe and a leading right-wing racist person who attacks Black Lives, who attacks Sanctuary, who attacks everybody, and the Canary Mission, which is, we discovered, was a shadowy site. That is not just about me. It's about me and about students and about community. So the names of students were posted. We were accused of terrorism. We were accused of what they call Jew hatred. And so it was intimidating. And the university left them up, saying that this is freedom of speech. They were weaponizing freedom of speech for the interests of the right wing. The students, I have received death threats, multiple death threats. And the death threats actually increase every single time I get to receive a threat from the university, from the provost or the president condemns me, or the chancellor of CSU condemns me. There are more death threats on my voicemail, in emails, in letters. Actually, the last threat was a letter that was sent to me via the university president's office, that the university sat on for almost a month without actually letting me know that there is a threat against me.
That was Professor Rabab Abdulhadi speaking to Pacifica Steve Seltzer. Here are some more opinions about Leila Khalid and why the event may have been censored. We thank Amir Zahr for these recording.
We had a tour for the memorial that we established for the survivors of the Japanese military sex slavery that we founded in San Francisco. And then I always wanted to learn more about the struggles in Palestine. Through Professor Abdulhadi's work, I learned how central and how influential Leila Khaled has been in Palestine, in Arab American feminism. But then by learning that, I'm also realizing that how foundational her work is for widely, like for all of us to do feminism all over the world. And I especially feel a very deep connection between my own struggle, although it's very different. I'm not saying it's the same, but we are also struggling with state silencing us. And so I'm learning so much from Leila Khaled's life and work.
I think that she has definitely demonstrated to me and to many other young Arab Palestinian women that a woman's place is in the fight for liberation, and that we must challenge these narratives that are imposed upon us by society, and that it's possible. It's just a part of the webinar. She's an integral part of the webinar. And not to detract from any of the other panelists, but it is really about commemorating her and her role in the in Arab feminism and Palestinian feminism specifically. So as a Palestinian in America, Palestinian American, it's very important. It's integral to our existence to support something like this as women, first and foremost, but also as Palestinians. So I think sort of supporting the student voice in this, and how showing and demonstrating how much students are actively mobilizing to support this event, is really important.
Chicago healthcare workers are facing increasingly dangerous and deadly conditions for themselves and their patients due to the COVID crisis. Pacifica's favorite comedian, Jimmy Dore, has a thing or two to say about that.
Hey, here's some good news in a sense. People are getting together, fighting back against the establishment instead of just voting for a corporate warmongering racist and saying, I did my work. People are actually getting together. In Chicago, healthcare workers are leading the largest strike ever at the University of Illinois Chicago. In the face of a deadly pandemic, the UIC's largely Black and Latino hospital workforce is demanding workplace safety and a livable wage. Nearly 5,000 workers at the University of Illinois at Chicago, 5,000 workers are on strike this week in the biggest work stoppage the campus has ever seen. The strikers, who are primarily Black and Latino hospital workers, are fighting for better health care, workplace safety, and livable wages as the COVID-19 pandemic rages on. And hopefully every other university in the country follows their example. The walkout started on September 12th when hundreds of nurses with the Illinois Nurses Association hit the picket lines. Nurses! Nurses and teachers. Like the only thing we can rely on. And Christian Smalls.
Those have to be the smallest unions around now, right?
There aren't any real unions left anymore.
Teaching and nurses.
We got the Teamsters. That still is a thing. Auto workers. UAW. They still make cars in America. Isn't that hard to believe? Then quickly grew two days later when thousands more clerical, professional, technical, and maintenance workers from the SEIU Local 73 also went on strike. They're striking for things they shouldn't even have to ask for. They're striking for a livable wage and PPEs. Stuff they shouldn't even have to ask for. A livable wage and protective gear from COVID. Stuff they shouldn't even have to ask for. They have to strike to get it. That's how messed up capitalism is in America. That's how corrupted everything is in America. We won't stop until workplace conditions improve, wages are better, safe staffing levels are implemented, personal protective equipment is universal, and protections from privatization are in place. In other words, they may never be able to stop.
What do we want? Contract! What do we want?
Now! If we don't get it,
we're trying to build more awareness, especially down here downtown by the governor's office.
He's been a hero for us earlier, and we're asking him now to stand with all of the heroes that you see out here. Wow.
The 4,000 SEIU members, which include the lab and medical techs, clerical and maintenance workers at the hospital, joined the 800 nurses in their strike. Both are asking for what they say is a modest pay increase and workplace protection. Nurses also are looking for a pay increase, but also want more personal protection equipment and a lighter patient load.
We continue negotiating. Hopefully this opens eyes. If we have to be out here again, I want to be out here again. I don't know. I think we should continue doing it.
The hospital has said in statements it respects its employees' right to strike, but doesn't think a work stoppage at this time is good for the campus community.
No, we should wait. For a time when it's more convenient for the campus community to do our protests. I don't think they understand how protests are supposed to work. Protests are supposed to inflict pain. Protests are supposed to make it uncomfortable. That's why you protest. This would be the perfect time. If the university says this is the wrong time to do it, this is the exact right time to do it. That the point of a strike is you're supposed to show them how irreplaceable you are. You're supposed to inflict pain on your employer so that they meet your demands. Okay. Since the pandemic began, healthcare workers at UIC have been sounding the alarm about inadequate safety measures, including lack of proper PPE and universal testing. Approximately 270 UIC healthcare workers have now contracted the coronavirus. Almost 300 workers at this hospital have contracted the coronavirus. So it looks like they have a point. And at least four of them have lost their lives to the virus. According to Joel Losbacher, a UIC civil service employee with SEIU 73, hospital management initially instructed workers not to wear masks, telling them it was a bad look. Hey, you know what else is a bad look? Organ failure. While publicly praising frontline workers as heroes, university administrators remain recalcitrant in contract negotiations, consistently rejecting unions' proposals meant to improve workplace safety. So apparently, the administrators at the University of Illinois Chicago also have a public and a private position. Their public position is to call them heroes. Their private position is to f*** them over.
That was Jimmy Dore, host of The Jimmy Dore Show. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Si no creyera en la locura de la garganta del sinsonte, si no creyera que en el monte se esconde el trino y la pavura, si no creyera en la balanza, en la razón del equilibrio, si no creyera en el delirio, si no creyera en la esperanza, si no creyera en lo que agencio, si no creyera en mi camino, si no creyera en mi sonido, si no creyera en mi silencio, ay, qué cosa fuera. Fuera la masa sin cantera, una masa hecha de cuerdas y tendones, un revoltijo de carnes con madera, un instrumento sin mejores pretensiones, que lucecitas montadas para escena. Qué cosa fuera, corazón, qué cosa fuera, qué cosa fuera la masa sin cantera. Testaferro del traidor de los aplausos, un servidor de pasado en copa nueva, un eternizador de dioses del ocaso, júbilo hervido con trapo y lentejuela. Qué cosa fuera, corazón, qué cosa fuera, qué cosa fuera. Creyera en lo más duro, si no creyera en el deseo, si no creyera en lo que creo, si no creyera en algo puro, si no creyera en cada herida, si no creyera en lo que rompo, si no creyera en lo que escondo, hermano de la vida, si no creyera en quien me escucha, si no creyera en lo que duele, si no creyera en lo que quiere, si no creyera en lo que lucha, ay, qué cosa fuera, qué cosa fuera la masa sin cantera, una masa y fuecha de cuerda.
Just heard Masa by the late Argentine singer Mercedes Sosa.
Muchas gracias. Creo en ustedes profundamente, por eso canto. Muchas gracias.
Daniel Cameron is no different than the sellout Negroes that sold our people into slavery.
She said it.
And helped white men to capture our people, to abuse them and to traffic them, while our women were raped, while our men were raped by savages. That is who you are, Daniel Cameron. You are a coward, you are a sellout, and you were used by the system to harm your own mama, your own black mama. We have no respect for you. No respect for your black skin. Because all of our skin folk ain't our kin folk. And you do not belong to black people at all.
We now go to Louisville, Kentucky, where the struggle to demand justice continues after the state attorney general refused to hold the police responsible for the killing of Breonna Taylor. Brian Manley, a Pacifica affiliate, WXOX in Louisville, has this story.
On August 13th, WXOX Louisville joined 70 community radio stations across the U.S. and Europe to jointly air a tribute to Breonna Taylor, playing her favorite song, Everything, by Mary J. Blige. WXOX's Tia Marie also honored names of black women killed by police brutality.
You died so tragically, and today we honor you. Say their names. Michelle Casso, Rikia Boyd, Kayla Moore, Sandra Bland.
This tribute also included a message from Brianna's aunt, Bianca Austin.
Hey everyone, my name is Bianca Austin and I'm the aunt of Brianna Taylor. And on behalf of our family, we want to thank everyone for standing with us as we fight for justice for Brianna. We will not stop until Daniel Cameron, the Attorney General, holds these officers accountable. Justice for Brianna means justice for everyone who has been a victim to police brutality, especially our young Black women. Justice for Brianna means an end to police brutality and social injustice. We will not tolerate this any longer. The time is now. So please be a part of the change and get involved.
September 23rd, protesters listened to the results of Daniel Cameron's grand jury, hoping for that accountability.
That concludes the business of the grand jury.
What the hell?
Instead of justice, Brianna Taylor's family and community were told that officers Miles Cosgrove and Jonathan Mattingly were justified in their use of force. Third officer Brett Hankinson was charged only with wanton endangerment for shooting the walls of a neighboring apartment. After more than 6 months since Brianna's death, a deep impatience turned to shock, heartbreak, betrayal, unity, and return to day 120 of protests, now renewed as day one. Only once again to see the Louisville Police and National Guard in greater numbers as they barricade the city center, declare a state of emergency, and enforce a curfew against a grieving community who continue to march.
Nothing's really. We've been for 121 days. We just been wanting our justice. They didn't give it to us. So our main focus is actually like getting it. Like keep protesting. You know, keep annoying them until we get it. Cause they really did do us wrong. I was shook, and then I started breaking out crying. Cause I was like really, really hurt. My body was hurting. I was aching. I had a headache. And then I got my tears out and then I got serious because I knew what was the next step. Yeah, everybody's tired. We back in the beginning of protesting.
Yeah, I know everybody's calling it day one, day two again.
It's day two. The clock got reset on 119.
Justice! Burn it down! 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 Bur
Protesters in Louisville are exhausted from fighting with the police force that is increasing in aggression, ineptitude from a mayor recently voted no confidence by the Metro Council, white supremacist vigilante groups, and too many other obstacles. But after Cameron's inaction, or some would say definitely a betrayal, protesters are continuing to fight in Louisville.
That was Brian Manley from WXOX in Louisville, Kentucky. The brutality of capitalism is the focus of a talk by New York Teamster Local 808 President Chris Silvera.
Dr. Martin Luther King, in a speech at Riverside Church in 1967, said, "I knew that I could never raise my voice against the violence of the oppressed in the ghettos without having first spoken clearly to the greatest purveyor of violence in the world today, my own government. America was founded in violence. Violence against the indigenous people, violence against the captured and enslaved Africans, even violence against the early Irish indentured servants. The police are protected of the propertied class and enforcers of white supremacy. In their earlier iteration, they were catchers of escaped Africans who sought freedom. Africans in America are a majority working class people. In fact, most Americans are members of the working class. The need of the ruling class to maintain divisions within the working class continues unabated. The police continue to enforce white supremacy in order to weaken class solidarity." Dr. King, in his speech titled "The Other America," points out that African Americans find themselves living in a triple ghetto, a ghetto of race, a ghetto of poverty, a ghetto of human misery. Some of the recent victims of this triple ghetto are Rayshard Brooks, who fell asleep in his car waiting on fast food and was killed. George Floyd, purchasing cigarettes at a grocery store. Ahmaud Arbery was out for a jog. Breonna Taylor was an EMT worker shot in her bed. Philando Castile was a Teamster member in his car with his family, shot by the police. Sandra Bland was a college-educated working woman in search of work. Walter Scott, a veteran and forklift operator, shot in the back by the police. Alton Sterling was simply selling CDs. Eric Gardner was selling loose cigarettes, choked to death by the police in New York City. Terrence Crutcher was a member of the choir. Akai Gurley had just left his hairdresser, having his hair done, getting ready to go on vacation. Amadou Diallo was a street vendor shot 14 times in the back. Sean Bell held odd jobs while studying to become an electrician. Tamir Rice was only a child playing in the park. Ayanna Jones was a child sitting on a couch in her living room. America responds to violence and acts with violence. The enslavement of Africans ended through the violence of the Civil War. Overt Jim Crow ended with televised police violence against peaceful Africans marching for their freedom. The Montgomery Ward strike of 1905 saw the violence of the police against the striking workers. 26 were killed, 416 were injured, and 12 were arrested. The year 1934 was significant in labor history. You had the Toledo Auto Light strike of April 12th to June 3rd, 1934, that left two workers dead and over 200 injured at the hands of the police and the National Guards. The West Coast waterfront strike of 1934 left 9 dead and over 1,000 injured. In Minneapolis, a general strike led by Teamsters Local 574 left 4 workers dead and over 67 workers injured. A public commission later set up by the governor of Minnesota reported, "The police took direct aim at the pickets and fired to kill. Physical violence of the police was at no time endangered. No weapons were in the possession of the pickets." The 8-hour day came as a result of the Haymarket riot. The great gains of the labor movement came as a result of workers getting brutalized by the police, private security, corporations known as such as the Pinkertons, and the National Guards. Today, the demons of low wages, poor housing, poor schools, food deserts, high unemployment, and redlining by banks continue to haunt African Americans. These issues are systemic and violent against the black working class and can only be eradicated by public policy. The past several weeks have seen all our media sources filled with police brutality against peaceful protesters in cities such as Minneapolis, New York City, Washington, D.C., Portland, Oregon, to name a few. All of us today are witnesses to state-sanctioned brutality against the working class exercising their constitutional rights. We can no longer pretend that the police act independently of the state. The police, like the slave catchers, are sanctioned and are an extension of the ruling class. Their role is to defeat working class people whenever they make a demand for social, political, or economic advancements. Dr. King, in the same speech to Two Americas, said that in 1863, the Negro was freed from the bondage of physical slavery. But at the same time, the nation refused to give him land to make that freedom meaningful. And at the same time period, America was giving millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that America was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor that would make it possible to grow and develop, and refused to give that economic floor to its black peasants. In the same speech, The Other America, Dr. King pointed out that it's much easier to integrate a lunch counter than it is to guarantee a livable income and a good solid job. It's much easier to guarantee the right to vote than it is to guarantee the right to live in sanitary, decent housing conditions. It's much easier to integrate a public park than it is to make genuine, quality, integrated education a reality. And so today we're struggling for something which says we demand genuine equality.
That was Chris Silvera, New York Teamster Local 808 president, who is also running for president of the Teamsters Union. This concludes today's edition of COVID, Race, and Democracy, a collective effort by producers from the Pacifica Radio Network and its affiliate stations across the United States. Today's show was produced by Steve Zeltzer and Polina Vasiliev. The show's executive producers are Akua Holt, Steve Zeltzer, and Polina Vasiliev. Verna Avery Brown is our executive consultant. I've been your host, Nana Jumphy. You can find all previous episodes on our website, covidtaskforce.pacifica.org. Thanks for listening.
Every day, corporations that own 90% of mass media give you a dose of propaganda to keep your brain filled with hate for a particular head of state.
First, basic facts. China's been ruled by a brutal authoritarian regime.
Maduro is a brutal, corrupt leader. We will continue to make the case that he should step aside.
It may be the leader of Iran, North Korea, Cuba, Nicaragua, Venezuela, or Russia. The purpose is to keep you ready, to give your money and the lives of your sons and daughters to save the world. In the name of democracy, they loot and rob the resources of other nations.
Venezuela is one of the three countries I call the Troika of Tyranny. It'll make a big difference to the United States economically.
For a democracy where politicians are for sale and for the perpetuity of the mighty U.S. dollar, the time is now to put a stop to all these deadly mind games. Support your local community radio. More information at pacifica.org.